So I think it's time that we start our webinar. It's my name is Rudy Vansnik, chair of NPOC and moderator of this webinar. I'm welcoming everybody in the remote session. So if you have questions up front among the start of this meeting, I would like to ask you for raising your hand or put your question in the chat room so that we can pick it up and give it to our panel members. This webinar is the second one of a series of webinars that we're going to organize that is focusing on getting the NGO and not-for-profit world, the civil society world, closer to the internet ecosystem issues that we all know, and the title, therefore, is called What Every Civil Society Organization Should Know About Its Use of the Internet and Never Dare to Ask. And this is part one. The first one was a few weeks ago in Washington, and we had more than 45 remote participants. We had a lot of very active interaction, and we were really surprised about the interaction we had during that meeting. Today we have another set of speakers on this panel, and the first topic that is going to be addressed will be presented by Sam Lanfranco, who is the chair of our NPOC Policy Committee and is also the chair of ISOC Canada Public Policy Committee. So I could say that he is a policy committee specialist, as he is able to share many of them. The topic he is going to address is Making It Work for You, Emerging Opportunities and Challenges for Civil Society Organizations on the Internet. So I'm not going to delay anymore, and I'm going to hand over the mic to Sam Lanfranco.
Okay, thank you, Rudy. If people have trouble hearing me or other issues, put them into the chat room and I can read them from here at the same time as I'm talking. I'm going to talk about issues confronting civil society, non-governmental organizations, not-for-profit organizations, and I'm going to go in a fairly bullet point fashion, and I'm not going to touch on a lot of the issues that we normally deal with. They will be dealt with later in this webinar. Some inside the IP section and other, but I'm going to try and tease forward some of the issues that are being confronted or not being confronted by civil society and by NGOs and nonprofit organizations that will haunt their existence where they are. This is not so much about what ICANN does and what NPOC does, but the context in which these organizations find themselves, in particular with respect to operational issues of the internet. So, and I'm going to go fairly fast. If there are questions, you comment later, or you send me email, or you chase me around the world, or wherever. Okay, so Making It Work for You, Emerging Opportunities and Challenges for Civil Society Organizations on the Internet. If you are a civil society organization, for the most part, you've been bombarded with what a great opportunity it is, but you can't get there from here. I'm not going to talk about that part as much as some of the challenges, and not the standard challenges. Okay. For most NGOs, I'll call it civil society for short. I'm using something different there. There are challenges, there's a context, and there's an urgency. The challenges are limited resources and two other risks that I want to stress. The risks of inaction and the risks of bad action. Okay. And that there's a sense of urgency. And you'll understand what I mean by that sense of urgency once I've given you a couple of examples. I've chosen Goya's image of a sleeping person with monsters behind them and basically said that his is the sleep of reason produces monsters, slow movement here produces both monsters and it produces problems for civil society. Things happen around you and you find that your mission and vision have been negatively impacted by what it is you're trying to do. And in NPOC, we're particularly sensitive to the fact that the NPOC civil society constituency has its own mission and vision. Health, education, welfare, justice, child, gender, whatever, and that the organization's key mission is not something about the internet. The internet is part of the environment in which they live and the environment that they use to do what they're going to do. But unlike other groups within ICANN, they are not, their mission and vision are not the internet. For example, the Internet Society chapters, for the most part, their focus is on the internet and plus other issues. But I recognize that difference in focus, and this is where you are and what your context, not where we are and how you can think about this. And I'm using it as an example of the need for response speed, for knowledge engagement, and face the face of change. A case study. It's a two-slide case study of Myanmar. The first part of it is the changing context. In 2009, a 3G SIM card in Myanmar was $2,000 US. In December of last year, it was $1.50 US. Myanmar has government policies with respect to the kinds of cell phones that will be imported. You can't bring in something that's not a smartphone. You can't sell something that's not a smartphone. You can bring it in, but the policies are that they will not be smartphones. Myanmar has the contract signed to build 8,000 cell towers in Myanmar by 2018. If they put them uniformly across the country, which they won't, since a lot of it is there's nobody there, that would be one cell tower every 10 square, in the middle of every 10 square kilometer grid in the whole country. Okay, so two things are happening there. The presence of the internet and the transition are taking place at a phenomenal speed, A, and B, Myanmar in its own history is having to build a new civil society base. So as the civil society is trying to construct itself, it's doing so in a period, in a tsunami of technological change. Okay. To give you an example, in 2015, internet use was not only under 2%, it was 0.02%. And my prediction is, my conservative one, is that by 2020 it'll be over 60%, and I suspect that it'll be over 60% before that. Do the NGOs inside Myanmar have a capacity to deal with the operational issues that they're going to have to confront with respect to Myanmar's policy, not just global policy? Where do they get their capacity to engage in policy development and implementation in this area, which will be crucial to them in ways I'll point out in a minute, without, at the same time, building their own capacity? So the real question here is how quickly can they build the capacity? This is true for other more mature economies, more mature internets, and so forth. I've just mentioned a Syria case study here that people could get from me that was done by a German group in Syria, and it was the building of civil society in Syria, which is also undergoing a massive transformation from what it was before the fighting started to what they hope it'll be after the fighting is over. But the interesting lessons learned from this case of civil society being built in Syria is that the challenges that they face in that conflict situation are identical to the challenges they face in Canada or the United States or Europe with respect to, in particular, how external actors interact with them. So this capacity building issue is a massive one that we have to pay attention to, and it's in addition to the other capacity building challenges of people on the internet. What are the issues? Here's one. Yesterday, the Internet Society, with funding from a variety of sources and others, opened a new IXP, an Internet Exchange Point, in Bangkok. And they had a celebration about that. And in my discussions with them, I said, well, there are issues here that we want to discuss in civil society. And their response was, no, this is a technical thing. It's got no political dimensions to it at all. And my point is, how did that get to there? How did we lose control? There we go. There it is. One of the issues is if you're in a regime or in a location where there may be interference in what you do on the part of the government, as civil society, would you prefer to have the IXPs inside the country or outside the country? I don't know the answer. I don't know the context, but it is a question, and it's not a technical question. I just leave it at that. Okay. Another one is you're an NGO in Africa, or you're an NGO in Vienna. Those are the two examples that I'm just referencing here. You're just busy doing what you're going to do. You may not have a domain name now. When I began doing this analysis, I didn't think that was important. It is important for reasons that will come out of this seminar. There's a small passage in proposed European regulations that are being debated now, and the decisions are made in a very opaque way inside Europe. There's no public discussion, there's no nothing. And it's to make it, to prohibit a domain name that has within the domain name a brand name or trademark name of something else. So I've given you three examples on this slide. I'm part of the International Federation for Information Technology and Tourism, IFIT. Well, there's a health company that has IFIT, I-F-I-T, as its registered trademark. Under this new legislation, they could come after under IFIT, the organization, if we hadn't already trademarked our acronym. The same, I'm part of the board of the Society for the Advancement of Science in Africa. We're SASA. That's okay. There's a company around here, it's either in Singapore or Hong Kong, called SASA that sells clothing. They could object to our sasascience.net website domain name under this European regulation. And since it's trademark regulation, even so a legislation takes place in Europe, it might have a global implication. The third one I had was just as an example. If I tried to get the site icannotnewgtld.com, ICANN under this regulation could object because I'm using ICANNOT, and ICANN is part of that. Even though it doesn't say anything about ICANN, it just says ICANNOT. The implication is there because of the GTLD. On social media, I'm an economist. When individuals go on and look at what's available in social media, I see in their eyes, they go, welcome to the candy store. There's a whole lot of candy here, and it's free. I don't have to pay for it. I get a web page. I get a Twitter account. I get whatever. Okay, well, there's no such thing as a free lunch. Economists will remind you of that over and over again. What these next three or four slides are about, and I go through it very quickly, is that if you are a civil society organization using social media, you are serving yourself up and all of your clients and those that correspond with you for data mining for commercial purposes. Data is harvested from you and from visitors. If you're an individual, fine. You want to do that, do it. But there is an ethical issue there. You have no control over what is data mined, and you have free candy. You're getting access. Okay. But there are some problems here beyond that. The one is the major dilemma is that if that's your prime portal to reach your constituency and your audience, you have not built into your own organization either a budget line to cover that kind of activity, nor have you developed any in-house expertise about how to make decisions if you actually have to have a website. I don't say you have to run the website or do the HTML, but you don't even have the in-house capacity to assess proposals. So in a way, the nonprofit organization or the civil society organization is trapped like an indentured worker on somebody else's farm, having to share both your digital data and the digital data of the entire family that's around you. There's an ethical issue, and there's an operational issue. Is that a good place to be? So the precautionary principle, which is something that a lot of people like to use when assessing a strategy, is a social media themselves, their survival and revenue risks translate into risks for those of you that are using them. Is Facebook going to be around forever? Are the terms of access to Facebook going to be what they're going to be? Is Google going to be around forever? If you look at it, what's happening, Google disintermediated marketing. Facebook disintermediated marketing, took business away from a whole bunch of people and sits between the consumers and the sellers. The sellers are in the back room working very hard to figure out how to disintermediate Google and Facebook. You know, and what's going to happen, we don't know. But the less capacity civil society has to fall back or go forward depends in part on whether or not they own a domain name. Because my prediction as an economist is what will happen is that, we'll go to the next slide, that the financial viability risk for the candy store will get greater, and they will have to do one of two things. Either turn to fee-for-service models, or they will have to be more to get more clever and more extensive or intrusive in their data mining of the data flows that are being generated. The re-intermediation risk is that the sellers, buyers, and competitors are seeking ways to re-intermediate around the existing social media platforms, both for their profits or to protect their positions as sellers or buyers. And the implication there comes back to, if you're a civil society group, do you have a domain name, even if now it's just being used to forward to your Facebook page? And do you have the budgetary and skills capacities to figure out what to do if on a given day Facebook or Google presents you with a terms of use agreement that you don't like? Are you an indentured laborer with no place to go, or are you a freeholder who can go somewhere? Okay, so the last part's this, then our government's many governments require nonprofit organization registration allowing foreigners to receive foreign funding. Okay. It's not a very big jump to say that if you have a complimentary Facebook or Gmail account outside the country, you are receiving material benefit as an organization. As an organization, you have to register. If you register and they don't like what you're doing, they can deregister you. If you're not registered, you're breaking the law. So even something as simple as the relationship between having an external account and the registration requirements of a government can be a problem. So in terms of civil society organization, I've put this thing up. If the service is free, you are the product. You know, if you're engaged in this and you have options, you're like the chicken supplying eggs to breakfast. If you are committed and you don't have options, you're like the pig supplying bacon. So breakfast, the domain name chicken survives, but the social media pig is eaten. So the two things here are to get aware and have a backup strategy. Okay, that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Sam, for a lot of good inputs on the technical parts of how NGOs are confronted with issues when they want to touch upon internet and be a partner in the internet ecosystem. It is not so easy for most of them to understand why they need to be on social media, or why they need a domain name, or why they need their own website. But as we all know, it has to do with identity. And in Facebook, you're rather feeding a big engine and a lot of income for them, and your identity is very, very, very small. As an NGO, it's better to have your domain name, your own website, because that's your ID. That's where you can be found. That's where you're distinguishing yourself from other parts of the world. So I'm looking around and looking into the chat room. If there is any question for Sam, I would say raise them now. If you have any comments or ideas you want to share about this, please raise your hand. I see none for the moment. Oh, yep. Please state your name before you speak.
Yeah, Carlos Rodriguez from Nicaragua. I would like to say the comment that I found this really interesting. I mean, in my country, the fact is that there are not only NGOs, but also small businesses, rather to have a Facebook page or more Twitter followers than actually a domain. So my question is, based on that reality, what could be the strategy? I mean, if you have a local representative in a developing country like mine, what could be the strategies to work for in order to have more domains? Thank you.
There are several parts to that question. Thank you, Carlos. Very, very quickly, for them to have a domain, there has to be a business case that they understand and makes sense to them. Part of that is, and with a little more time, is looking at what the business case has been for their Facebook page. Has that been paying off? I mean, likes don't translate into sales. reviews might translate into for accommodations and restaurants and so forth. That could be different. But for many of those, it's helping them figure out who's their client base? How are they talking to them? What's paying off here and what can't pay off? It's a kind of standard business analysis thing. And one of the weaknesses with a lot of the efforts to help small businesses involve helping getting them started and helping them with financing, but don't help them with the capacity to do this kind of market analysis. It's really getting on the ground and listening to where they are and then figuring out, okay, you're here and that's out there. What can you use that will help you move forward instead of showing up with a shopping bag full of stuff and trying to sell them all these solutions? So, yeah, and have them work together. The people in a single location, if it's a set of hotels or B&Bs or cafes, the more they're talking to each other, because I work in this different tourism and information stuff here, the more they talk to each other, the better the solution is for that community.
Thank you, Sam. I hope that giving you an answer to your question. I think it's not so easy to get all the solutions. I have seen Joan raising her hand. Joan, you have the floor.
So the whole idea that a lot of not-for-profits or civil society opt to have a Facebook page because there's no cost, i.e. your free lunch analogy, actually has a cost because, one, they can be dictated to by the social media organizations. And the issue becomes they've built their constituency or community, and all of a sudden they're left out in the open. So in terms of what MPAR can do is to give some comparisons on the advantages and disadvantages of having a domain name that is secure and how to keep it secure as opposed to having something free that may not be necessarily secure.
Just a quick comment on that is, in many cases, that may turn out, we haven't done this yet, but in many cases that may just be getting your domain name, paying $10 a year or $13 a year and having it auto forward to your web page while you figure out what you're going to do. You've got your backup strategy in place. But the other is just to sensitize groups and for civil society as opposed to business. Getting people to come to your web page is like inviting somebody to your party, and when they get there, you say, "We need your fingerprints, your weight, your blood type, because this might be useful for us." Not that we're trying to help you, but this might be useful for us. And so there are some real ethical issues that come up. And my predictions, to stop this, as an economist, is that the business case is going to become more and more demanding for the first movers in these areas, because every time there's a first mover, first you get the imitators, and then they give up, then you get the people that try to disintermediate them. And that crew is out there now. I mean, Macy's is trying to figure out how to get rid of Facebook. Get them out of the way.
Thank you, Sam. We also experienced when we were looking into the issues of... I see a question from Eduardo Monge, from a remote participant. Sam, can you respond to that question?
Hola, Eduardo. Sí. That's the task before us. A lot of the internet and civil society discussion, quite properly, has been around privacy, security, fraud, etc. There's this whole level below that, and so that's part of the mission going forward now in NPOC, is to build some of that literature, some of those documents. Very simple. These are almost like at the level of the religious tracts that religious people go around when they're trying to get you to come to their church. We're not trying to get them to come to our church here. We're trying to raise their awareness where they are, so they sit around in the cafe or in the community and say, how do we want to deal with these issues? I suspect that there are very, very few civil society organizations in the world who had an ethical discussion with their membership over the data mining that takes place within the social networks. They know it's there. They complain about it. But have they had an internal dialogue to decide what they're going to do about it? That's what I'm going to try and promote in terms of the policy outreach.
Thank you, Sam. And I don't see no other questions for... this topic. As Sam already highlighted, that the domain name is quite important item for an NGO. We also discovered and experienced some issues that NGOs have when they have a domain name, when they got one. Most of them that we reached out to didn't know that they had to renew the domain name, and that's how they lost it. And at the end, others are taking advantage of that domain name. So there is an issue on the rights and the protections that are needed in order to be able to allow them to continue to have their domain name. It's really important. And that allows me to shift over to the second topic that we are going to discuss during this webinar. It's about the civil society online, domain names, brand protection, and abuse prevention. And we invited two panel members for this topic. The first one is René Xavier, director from Alpha and Omega. It's a law firm in Singapore, so it's a local representative of a community that we need to hear from in order to understand what we can do in global. So I will first hand over the mic to René, and we'll then come back to the second panel member, who is Brian Winterfeld.
Hello, everyone. I'm René from Singapore, and I'm here with my colleague in the IP industry, Brian, who's from the US. So with regard to this topic, first I need to just have a disclaimer. This is my first webinar presentation, so I don't know where to look, actually. So please excuse me. And I've got quite a few slides, so I'm going to skip through quite a few for you to read on your own. And we'll just focus on a couple of things, which is domain name infringement and then the recovery. So the infringement bit is quite universal in the sense that it's international, how infringement occurs. And the recovery, there could be some specific requirements and ways to recover in Singapore, which is different from other countries. So to prepare for this, I actually did some research to even understand what was the global internet use like. And I thought I'd just share those statistics on my slide, so please take your time to go through them on your own. And I also prepared this topic on the basis of my opinion that nonprofits should be governed, corporate governance and budgeting, just like for-profits. And I believe that the biggest difference between a not-for-profit and for-profit is the credibility. A not-for-profit cannot afford to lose its credibility and trust amongst its stakeholders. Just very quickly, Sam has already gone through the difference between having your own domain name and relying completely on social media. Two big differences that we should always remember is with the domain name, you own it and you control it. And with social media, you don't own it and you're not in control. Coming back to the issue of trust that you need to build, and that's what really differentiates you from a for-profit. Just by having a domain name, you automatically give yourself a higher level of credibility. You need to invest real money into getting a domain name and also developing a website. And then depending on the type of domain name you register, the registering authority imposes certain minimum requirements. So that also gives you a higher level of credibility. So we advise, you know, work with country top-level domain names. And in this slide, I've provided some minimum requirements required by certain countries in Southeast Asia. Two classic forms of domain name infringement, cyber squatting, and typo squatting. Okay, and here are some samples, just real examples that have happened after the tsunami and also the typhoon in the Philippines. Monetization motivates infringement. And what is the effect of this? Consumer confusion, lost web traffic, lost emails, and more importantly, lawsuits from consumers against the genuine intellectual property rights holders. Domain name recovery, practical thing to do when you find out your domain name has been infringed. Immediately try to find out the owner contact of the infringing domain name. And then save a copy, use your print screen options, save a copy for proof, should you need to go to court or take up any proceedings. And then send an email, a friendly email to the party, requesting them to transfer or take down the site. How would you resolve a domain name dispute in Singapore? Worldwide, there are really four ways to do it. Try to enter into an agreement with the other party, private negotiations. If that doesn't work, there's also alternative dispute resolutions where you could go for mediation or arbitration to come to some kind of settlement. And of course, there's court proceedings and the administrative procedure. Under ICANN, it's the Uniform Domain Name Resolution Policy. And in Singapore, it's under the Singapore Domain Name Resolution Policy. Personally, for me, with regard not-for-profits, I would advise private settlement or administration process. It's budget-friendly and it's quick. So I just want to spend a little bit of time looking at the difference between the Singapore dispute resolution and the Uniform Domain Name Resolution. Now, Singapore has adopted the Uniform Domain Name Resolution, but there are a couple of significant differences. One is that Singapore has actually incorporated a mediation process into their Singapore Domain Name Resolution policy. So you could actually file for administrative process to recover the domain name. You would be actually offered right at the beginning an option to mediate. And in case that mediation is successful, you could choose whether you want to record that as a finding of the administrative process or not. All right, so I've provided some information on that. Please take some time to read through. You need to also know that to recover a domain name in Singapore, and I think in most countries, the disputed domain name needs to be either identical or confusingly similar to your name or trademark. But that's another difference with Singapore. Because we have personal domain names as well, you could have a disputed domain name that is similar to a name and not just a trademark. And you could be able to, you would be able to recover that. You would also need to show that the infringing domain name, the registrant of this infringing domain name, has no legitimate rights to the domain name, and that the domain name was registered in bad faith. So some evidence that will work in favor of the complainant includes trademark registrations. So if you have trademark registrations, your domain name is made up of your trademark, that would be extremely helpful. And of course, there is also evidence that would work in favor of the registrant of the disputed name, and that would be that they had used the domain name in good faith, and that used predated the letter or the proceedings that you had initiated. In Singapore, the domain name process takes about, the administrative process takes about 3 months. Cost of it, relatively reasonable. If you have a one-panel arbitrator, you're looking at about 2,500 in official fees. I managed to find one not-for-profit Uniform Domain Name Resolution Policy Success Story, and that was Alcoholic Anonymous. And they were successful in getting their domain name back. The disputed domain name was alcoholicanonymous.net. Okay, so Brian, I hand over to you for trademarks, and thank you. Thank you.
So we thank you, Renee, for this clarification, explanation on some of the issues on trying to recover your domain name when you get it lost, or when it is hijacked, or when it is just captured. And I think it's an important aspect that we need to cover. So I'm handing over now the mic to the second member of this panel on brand protection and abuse prevention. It's Brian Winterfeld. He is the head of the internet practice at Catton Mitchell Roseman in Washington, D.C.
Thank you so much. So I am going to just cover very briefly at a high level some trademark basics that kind of builds on what we just learned from Renee and why really trademarks are important in general for nonprofits. I think from ICANN community standpoint, I think a lot of times the importance of intellectual property law to all types of organizations, including nonprofits, has sometimes been lost. And so I think one of the goals of the Pathfinder is to talk about how intellectual property rights are important to nonprofit organizations, and also how we can bring resources and tools to deal with some of the challenges that are faced when you have a very tight budget and very limited resources and you're trying to figure out how to build your online presence and protect your brand. So trademark is really any word, phrase, symbol, or design that identifies or serves as a source indicator for your products or services. And obviously, nonprofit entities and non-government organizations can own trademarks in connection with their public interest and also the charitable services that they offer. Many nonprofits, as we've already discussed, and NGOs acquire domain names that correspond to their trademarks. So the couple examples we have here are UnitedWay.org or RedCross.org. And they leverage their on-place marketplace for sharing information and for fundraising purposes. And as Renee already spoke about, unfortunately, online trademark abuse is not limited to for-profit entities. And unfortunately, often nonprofits find themselves the victims of this kind of nefarious behavior online and unfortunately don't always have the resources that for-profit organizations have to combat these kinds of issues. And so one example here that we have is a third-party registered American Red Cross.info and use the website to purportedly solicit donations, but we're actually defrauding these unwitting donors. So it's just a good example that, you know, nonprofits unfortunately suffer from these types of schemes as well, and so need to figure out how to deal with these types of abuses. Of course, we have to be balanced when we're looking at what kinds of cases or domain name issues we're going after. And there are legitimate uses of other people's brands that we need to be mindful of. There can be gripe sites or discussion forums where people are talking about an organization, evaluating how effective they think it is. And so these types of uses can be protected. In the United States, for example, we have the free speech rights. And people have the ability to, you know, have free discussions about what they think about a particular organization. So when we're kind of evaluating use of our brands by third parties, we need to be mindful of whether or not those uses can be legitimate or whether they really are true infringements. Acronyms are very popular with NGOs and nonprofits as identifiers. Acronyms can be very difficult to protect in the domain name system. Because really only one registrant can have them. And so an example we have here is BRAC, B-R-A-C. It's commonly used name for Bangladesh Rural Advancement Committee. The website is located at BRAC.net. But it's also an acronym for Breath Alcohol Content, Base Reliant Enclosure Commission, Brotherhood of Railway and Airline Clerks, and so on and so forth. And so that makes it very difficult. And it's another reason to be mindful about changes in the domain name system. For example, with the new GTLD program, with all these new GTLDs opening up, if you're a nonprofit and you do have an acronym particularly or something that is difficult to protect, you may want to make sure that for any of the new DSLDs that are launching that maybe have a nexus to your mission or the type of work you do or just to nonprofits in general, like a .NGO, probably want to make sure you try and defensively register your brands and these new ones as they launch. Very briefly, I just wanted to talk about an example of free speech in the DNS and really a balancing of brand owner rights. I think sometimes in the ICANN space, we've seen intellectual property interests discussed in a way that sometimes can be very polarizing, frankly, and sometimes that aren't supported. And I think it's important that we have a very balanced approach to trademark rights, and again, that we acknowledge that there are limitations on how far we can go in protecting our brands. So this is an example of a new regulation, Article 9, Directive Article 10, about rights conferred by a community trademark. So this is in the EU trademark reform that's actually in legislation right now. And they talked about what rights are conferred by a community trademark registration. And if you'll notice in red at the bottom, in addition to other kinds of rights that are outlined, they talk about use of the sign or trademark or company name as a domain name or as a part thereof. And the reason why this is actually extremely broad and potentially problematic is because the way it's written right now, any brand owner could come in and stop someone else from potentially legitimate use of their brand within a domain name or URL. And in the highlighted language, you'll see that it's not just identical use of the mark, but it could be a component of a domain name that's registered as well. And so this is an example where, you know, more than likely the EU folks who wrote the legislation were just not being thoughtful enough about the potential limitations on trademark rights. But this is ultimately, I think, overreaching the way it's written and something that we can really think about with regard to making sure that we strike the right balance in the DNS. Sure.
Sorry. Jean-Jacques, for the record, Jean-Jacques Sal from ICANN. If I'm not mistaken, the legislation is still being discussed. It's in a process called trilogue. And I wonder if you have considered maybe writing to the European Commission or Commissioner and European Parliament about this. I think having your voice heard there and those arguments made would be extremely helpful. I know that some organizations such as EuroISPA and Centre have already sent a letter, but I think... if you made your voice heard, it would possibly have a really good effect.
Yes, that's excellent advice. Thank you. I think there are organizations who are trying to bring this issue forward. Again, I think it likely was an oversight and not something that people were intending. I think they just hadn't thought it through. And so I think there are efforts being made to bring this to the attention while the trilogue is going on and to try and influence the ultimate language. But thank you for that suggestion. And for folks who are interested in knowing more about that, you can feel free to reach out to me. Klaus?
I have a question here which might not go directly to your presentation, but it's absolutely directly to your presentation. For me, there is at the moment a slight disconnect. For us who see this, is absolutely relevant, and both of your presentations were most excellent. The problem I have, and I need help, for example, and I think NPOC need help, how do we find a way to translate that going down to the grassroots better? We need to find better ways, and what we are doing now here in these webinars is very, very important, because basically you inform us, we learn from you, and we're getting better and better at it. But at the moment, how we as NPOC, after we learn from you and working with you all the time, how can we get that better down into the grassroots? And that's for me that big question hanging, our challenge hanging in the room. Any ideas?
Sure. I think today is really just a start. I think we're trying to raise awareness and sort of build bridges between intellectual property rights and the MPOC and how we can better support you. I think ultimately we want to probably have dedicated sessions that are really kind of more meant to be sort of primers for members about what steps they need to take and kind of walk them through how they should be thinking about their brands and brand protection and the DNS. And I think also, because resources are very difficult, I think we want to maybe try and put together a library of materials or resources that will be available that will help answer questions and provide some basic answers to questions that folks will have, and then also consider potentially putting together a network of counsel that are willing to be advocates on behalf of MPOC members, hopefully in a pro bono capacity at no cost, so that people can get customized advice and counsel, because I think ultimately they're going to need that. I think we can, give kind of more education, advice, and guidance at a very high level, and hopefully help people at least come up with a game plan about how to implement some of the advice. But ultimately, things need to be really tailored and structured, and some organizations just lack, the internal resources to answer some of these questions. So those are just some ideas I have. I don't know, Renee, what you think, or if you have things to add.
One other thing Klaus is thinking as well is if NPOC could actually tie up with the various registries, let the various registries know in the different countries so that, registrants could then have access to NPOC as well. Because I think right now it's still an organization that many registrants, whether even for-profit registrants, don't know about. And so not-for-profits, I'm not sure how else they would come to know about NPOC, unless they were very involved with ICANN as well.
Sam first. No, I'm extremely grateful, and I promise you we will really try to work that out, because this is, even if it looks a little bit abstract, this is it in the direct interest and in the operational concerns of the not-for-profit community. And that's very, very important.
Yes, Sam?
Just a small additional comment following up on what Brian said. The trilogue in the European community is a very opaque process. You can't see what's going on. So one part of the strategy should be to get the civil society organizations groups to be carrying on a dialogue inside their own countries with their own representatives to those bodies, because NPOC did make submissions. We made them to the individual members of the trilogue. We get no response. They're not obliged to say anything, but it helps if they are hearing from their own constituents in their own backyard.
Thank you, Sam. And picking up on the proposals of helping us, I think that one of the elements that we as NPOC need to take care of also is that we have to translate the language in the language of NGOs also. One of the items that I was mentioning is about the trademarks for NGOs. Most often an NGO considers that as an extremely high cost and very complex to obtain. So it is important that we are giving a good message and the right message and offer them a good platform to step into, so that, as I said earlier, one of the aspects that I discovered in the last 5-6 years being around in the NGOs, one of the biggest issues that I have seen are NGOs and representatives of NGOs are so shy that most often they don't show up. So you imagine how they will get the message passing by if they don't understand it. So I think it's important that we are translating the messages that are coming from intellectual property level in such a way that an NGO understands what it means. But what does that mean, a trademark, to me? I'm not trading. At the end, they are trading their knowledge, they are trading to their community. So I think there is a lot of work that needs to be done in order to make an NGO understanding that this is an elementary element to assure that your domain name will not disappear, that it is not going to be hijacked, so that we don't need to have to call on Renee and, hey, help us getting our domain name back. Because that's the highest value today that an NGO can get. The price of a domain name is cheap. It's the cheapest thing that an NGO can buy to brand their organization. But there is a lot that goes around it, and I'm quite happy that in Washington, Brian, you have been giving this explanation too, and again, and Renee now today, you're helping us getting closer to this community and helping them to understand that there is a need to join NPOC. There is a need to step into what ICANN is doing, because that's the way they can help ICANN and you too to maybe elaborate other processes, other mechanisms, so that they can really take advantage of the system. Because that's what I'm seeing. The business knows how to do. The NGOs don't. I see Melanie and Kate. Yeah.
Thank you. My name is Marilyn Cade. I'm really pleased to have come in a few minutes early because I'd like to propose an idea that occurred to me. I was on the Director General's Advisory Committee at WIPO for 3 years, and one of the things I learned about WIPO is that they are now doing a good deal of work in educational materials. And I wonder, Rudy, and I would be very happy to raise this with Francis directly. I know him very well. I wonder if we might talk about sitting down with the WIPO staff that focus on the regional engagement and see if it'd be possible to even develop some materials that could be suitable for reaching small businesses and NGOs in the developing countries. I think particularly NGOs should be of a high priority to WIPO because at this point they don't have a strong focus on it, but they have a strong interest in building the understanding in countries about the importance of intellectual property protection. That was how I became actually engaged with them in some of the materials they did on educating young people about respecting intellectual property, and perhaps that would be something to take up in the future. Thank you.
Marilyn, thanks a lot. We'll take an agenda. I will take it a slot in our meetings this week, so doing, we fix this. I see some hands, and then I will proceed with the next step of our session. Klaus and then John.
Marilyn, you are absolutely right. And the thing is, you have to understand, for example, that's one of our problems we have with the nonprofit community. You know that 10 years ago or 15 years ago, when I did development works, we were depending on handouts. Now an NGO has to be a better business than a business,
yes,
in order to survive. There are no handouts anymore. So that comparison between small business, medium business, yeah, young entrepreneurs, it's the same thing in brackets. The problem is that some fractions on both sides then say, what do we have to do with the others? And the other thing which was really for me important today with that webinar, and I'm really hoping that message goes out, is, for example, what Sam did so brilliantly is explaining the value of that product domain name. I think we underestimate the value of that product domain name, and we are saying, oh, we're taking for granted. And Sam really got it out to show the value of that product. And then René and Brian basically said, this is the way how you protect it. Yeah, so I think there's a lot of opportunities. We just have to go step by step and step by step and develop.
Thank you, Sam. John, if you can be brief.
Yeah. I won't repeat. Don't care for the record. I won't repeat everything that I wanted to because some of it had been addressed. But what I would like to propose is to ask all the volunteers, I have to because you volunteered about this brain trust, and Marilyn and putting together this whole brain trust for not-for-profit and to add value of what we offer as NPOC to our members, because that's what one of the things that I was struggling as a membership chair is what, other than informing them about, okay, here is the problem, is what support and resources do we offer them. Even if it's initial, yes, go ahead. I'd like to, I just want to put that on the table that I'd like to encourage you to do that.
Sure. Thank you, Joan. This is Brian Winterfeld. We do a lot of training for all of our clients. Even our for-profit clients need a lot of education in this space and how to put together programs. And so I'd love to partner with you to put together some very specific programs that really will just focus on IP and really focus on best practices and give tips and really suggestions on how to move forward in putting together an intellectual property program for a non-for-profit.
Okay, everybody, you heard it.
Yep.
That is life multi-stakeholderism.
Noted and branded. With this, I would like to go into a special event in this webinar. And it is, in fact, the result of trying to get together with different parts of the ICANN community also and trying to share concerns, but also sharing knowledge and appreciation for each other, and try to partner, like Marilyn Cade is just offering and Brian is offering. We already have been doing this, and I am happy and welcome Fadi Shadi, the CEO of ICANN here.
Thank you.
To assist at a momentum in the work that ANPOC has been doing in closing a partnership between two structures that are part of the GNSO community, each in a different direction, being GKPF being a member of ANPOC and an NGO working and trying to work on the NGO floor, and we have at the other side AFICTA, represented by Jameson, Lufuye. I'm sorry for my problem with your name, and I think it's due to the fact that I'm really getting tired after so many meetings this week. But the result that is coming out of the first webinar and the discussions that we had ongoing is that we are signing an MOU of collaboration between GKPF and AFICTA with the focus to work together on the African region and reach out to NGOs, and AFICTA will help GKPF in going in the region, going closer to the communities, and put efforts together. And we will probably count on Brian and Marilyn Cade to join us in doing this effort, because I think we have to do it all together. Individually, we cannot reach anything except the Mount Everest we can reach alone, but we can die alone on top of it also. So I would like to thank Jimson to willing to join us and partner with us. And I think, Fadi, that this proves that even the youngest and the smallest constituency in ICANN is able to produce stuff that enables ICANN to go in a very deep way in the bottom and bring it back to the top. I think this is a sample of collaborations that we need to try to repeat and extend as much as we can. So, and it thanks to you also, because you have been supporting us too and energizing us in saying, go for it, do it, it's needed. So we are very happy that we can count on you and Jean-Jacques, especially, who is the Vice President for the region of Europe, who is sitting with us very often together with Nigel, with all the other Vice Presidents of the region. And I think that this is a momentum that we are willing to put in the archives of ANPOC as a first milestone of how we can enable more NGOs getting into our community. So I would like to thank Jimson also, and we will proceed to the formal and official.
Rudy, I just want to say one thing as you're signing, because I would like to witness that. I've been accused of being just a runaway train, fast. I must say that if there is someone in the ICANN community who should now get that distinction, it's you. It is remarkable how much energy you have brought to your work. It is really remarkable. And you ask, really? Really? And I see it. Obviously, your colleagues see it. I see it. You send me the reports very, very gently. Once in a while, you say, hey, Fadi, this is what we've done. Frankly, our community is lucky to have you, really, because you do it from all your heart and all your energy, and I think you are the example of a true community leader. Secondly, I want to say that it's fantastic that Global Partnership and EFICTA are doing this. I really want to congratulate both of you on a good step of working together. And I think what is even more powerful is that in that step, neither me or you are signing anything. In other words, ICANN is the canvas that is enabling various parties to actually join hands and move forward. This is what ICANN should be. ICANN should be simply enabling, simply the canvas, and then the work of the community is really coming through here. I'm very proud of this achievement for EFICTA and Global Partnership, but also for you as an incoming leader of POC. I want you to know that ICANN is missing the NGO voice. I think we need that voice in ICANN.
We think so too.
I mean, believe me, I just left a session where, you know, 100 people were telling me that they're very worried about the multi-stakeholder model. You know, we were seeing that. There is no better guarantee for this model to move forward than what you're doing, to bring the balanced views. So when we have 149 governments today sitting at ICANN, and 31 international governmental organizations. How many NGOs? Not yet. So your drive, which is amazing, with your colleagues, to bring more NGOs to the table, is the guarantee that the multi-stakeholder model shall survive. So please keep doing it. Finally, I'm sure you know that Jean-Jacques is not just our Vice President for Engagement for Europe. He has been asked by Sally to take specific leadership in the area of civil society. So just like Chris Mondini focuses on business, he now has been given the mantle to focus on that. So besides his regional role, he has a global role. So therefore, you tell me, Fadi, I'm going to get so many NGOs involved by this day. Your goals should be his goals as well.
And it's already started.
Okay. Yeah. Finally, on Africa, very, very indebted to Africa, we are as a community. And as me personally, I say that. I'm delighted to see you, Jimson, step into this leadership role. And you have our support, you know that. And hopefully I will be in Abuja. I'll try my best to be with you at the next meeting so we can celebrate that. But we have an Africa strategy. And let's make sure that our Africa strategy, which has money and has resources, is aligned with what you and Global Partnership are signing with, so that we are aligned and we're sharing, we're synergized, not just stepping on each other, but rather synergized. So I'm here to witness this, and I'm happy to see it. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes, if you permit me, let me say a few words. Distinguished President and CEO and member of the team, Rudy, the Director of the Global Knowledge Partnership Foundation. You can say one of our great mentors, Marilyn Cade, a distinguished guest. Ladies and gentlemen, I really want to welcome you all to this very important meeting. Over the past few days, you will have been seeing that I've been wearing different caps. So actually, yes, I really wear many caps, you know, multitasking. And looking at EFICTA has a number of caps in not-for-profit because it's registered as a not-for-profit organization. And at the same time, they represent the interests of businesses, ICT associations, small businesses, and all those other users of the internet, commercial users of the internet in Africa. And we've been committed to fulfilling the promise of the digital age for Africa. And so when the invitation came and the opportunity came for us to collaborate, I want to thank Klaus for that initiative.
Yeah.
We also seize on it because it's part of our vision and our commitment for building capacity, for outreaching to many others in Africa with 1.1 billion people and a huge economy that is yet to be tapped. And so we see a lot of potential in this relationship. And most importantly, we want to appreciate ICANN for this platform. In fact, congratulate the CEO because it's under you that we're seeing a lot of new things happening
a lot of opportunity, enabling the diversity, enabling handshake, and reaching out to those that are yet to be on board. So we really appreciate your deep commitment to this vision. And so in this regard, I want to appreciate Judy again for collaborating, for accepting that we work together. You know, if you don't work together, there is no way you can move together. So we have to agree that we work together, and I see a lot of benefits coming out of this. So it's my pleasure to also append this understanding. So we'll sign, and
now we are
party
signing
will
for,
come
we have blood.
Witness this
in the back. Yep.
Yes.
Go.
From disadvantaged background. So, yeah, and we are a member of the National Council of Social Service. So I was actually interacting with Renee earlier that I could actually connect her to some people from that sector and more could be actually done to reach out and spread the word. But really, I think there are already so many issues that's battling us every day. So if we get some materials and information to us, you know, so that we can read and understand, I think that will bring the work forward a lot more easier.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And indeed, we are going to try. This is a second webinar, and we are improving our way of doing things. And we still need to learn and reach out. And we are so happy that we are able to have partnerships that allows us. Because, as I said, an NGO has not the facility to come to big meetings. They don't have the ability to travel. And we have to go and reach out to those who are close to these NGOs. And that's the goal. So you're welcome. Join us as an NPOC member so that we can help you providing all this material and stuff. And then you can, of course, help us having new members coming from your region.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Rudy. Thanks, Renee.
Thank you. Yes. So the third part of our webinar will be presented by Jean-Jacques Sahel. As you heard, he has extended his mission and duties. I hope it earns something also, Jean-Jacques. No? Oh, damn it. I will talk to Fadi. And he is responsible for
as you heard, a larger scope of activities reaching out to the civil society. And we have Nigel Hickson, who is based in Geneva now, if I'm not wrong, a longtime friend in ICANN. They are going to present you their views and visions of what ICANN can do, can help in the context of civil society.
Thank you very much, Rudy. And I will try to be brief, partly because time flies. And then I'll pass on to Nigel, who will cover some of the wider internet governance, I think, discussions. I think, as we've heard in the first part of this webinar, the domain names and generally digital presence is increasingly crucial for civil society. And, you know, on a very day-to-day basis, it's important to know how to run your website and how to keep it and protect it. And that's part of the reasons why getting involved in ICANN can be important. The other reason being that at ICANN there are matters which, frankly, require civil society to be there. With the internet, we're faced with a technology, with a platform which is inherently global, cross-border. And the way that and that raises challenges, that raises questions, new questions. And traditional methods of answering questions and governing are just not really fit for purpose in such an environment. And that's why, in part, the governance of the internet has evolved to be based on what we now call the multi-stakeholder model. Because you need to have all the relevant stakeholders present. When you talk about cyber squatting, it's not something that you can just solve by enacting a law at national level and that just a government can deal with. You have to be able to have the government talking to industry and making sure that they also understand the voice of the users, the voice of society. And that's why having that at the international level, having all the relevant stakeholders, the people who have an interest, a stake in these issues and an understanding of these issues and different perspectives is paramount. That's how ICANN was formed, how it was structured. And so when it comes to civil society, ICANN is a very unique setup. There's very few mechanisms internationally that are so set up, in which, you know, in traditional settings, you might see photos still up to this day very often, including at sort of fairly normal international meetings, when you see civil society, the photo is of them outside the gate with posters and placards and shouting, trying to get their voice heard above the wall in the negotiating room. Maybe sometimes the gate opens and they're allowed to sit and observe. In even better circumstances, they're allowed maybe to put in submissions or read a statement. That's how it's done traditionally. But in ICANN, it's not like that. In ICANN, like today, like in this meeting, civil society is not even just able to have its voice heard. It's able to initiate policy. It's able to be around the table, negotiate policy, negotiate decisions and procedures with other stakeholders, with business, with governments, with academia around the table. And that makes for far stronger, far better policies, far better procedures for how the domain name system is coordinated within ICANN. Because we do have those voices from civil society, from all over the world, from different parts of civil society, different perspectives in civil society. So it's a unique setup. It's a unique chance, I think, for civil society to actually not simply talk about doing the right thing, but contribute to doing the right thing. So I really encourage all of you, especially those on the line in the webinar, to get involved, or if you are involved already, to be more involved in ICANN. I think we've got a great chance to make this model work within ICANN, and maybe more importantly, to make it work so well that it inspires other spheres of life and government and society, and instill this spirit of multi-stakeholder governance elsewhere, so that we can have the voices of civil society in particular heard and meaningful and impacting in all spheres of economic and social life. I think that's our great chance. We're in the middle of a really important transition at ICANN, where we've had a traditional, historical link with the US government because they funded the research projects that became the internet. And they announced, the US government announced their intention to transition that, to sever their links and simply let the multi-stakeholder community take the reins and oversee the work that is performed by ICANN. So it's really this multi-stakeholder model coming of age, really becoming independent. It's a great chance. And with that comes great responsibility and the need to be very accountable and transparent. All those are areas where civil society input and participation will make things only better. So I'll conclude with that, with just another call for action. Please join, please get involved, please participate. We not only welcome you, we need you here. And I think it's a really exciting development in the 21st century. That's the way where it should be. It's citizen-driven 21st century where we can, thanks to the internet, have a governance that is user citizen-driven. So thanks for all the work, and I look forward to welcoming lots of new people from the webinar and elsewhere into these groups in the future. Thank you, and I'll pass on to Nigel.
Thank you, Jean-Jacques, for the remote participants and for those local here. The streaming is still going on, so the Adobe is actually in maintenance phase, which we didn't plan at all. But the streaming is going on. It's all recorded, so there is no issue with that.
About the recording, because at the end, for example, in Washington, we had 45 people connected and so many more downloads.
Yeah, so it is recorded still, so there is no issue. Everybody will be able to, and we will share the slides anyway. I have one little question, Jean-Jacques, about the proposal that you, or the action that you're requesting is, okay, come and join. Is there today a specific element in which we, NPOC and NGOs, can step in with regards to the NTIA negotiation, the IANA transition? Is there something that NGOs have to bring to you to maybe change ideas and philosophies in what I've heard, the two proposals, and...
Yeah. Thank you, that's a really good question. So, certainly, like any other discussions in ICANN, we need a voice of civil society in all the various working groups that are looking at this transition. But I think, perhaps much more usefully and importantly, where civil society has got a lot of expertise is in the area of accountability and governance, good governance. So there's a parallel track that's been created to basically make sure that once the US government has transitioned its current oversight role, ICANN as an organization is structured in a way where it has all the right checks and balances, that it can truly be accountable to the wider community and perform its duties well and be upheld for it. So I would encourage civil society to be in particular following that track. The discussions are open to anyone. You can become a full participant. You can join remotely and actually contribute, or you can simply observe. You can certainly submit. There's mailing lists. All that is on, I think it's ICANN.org/IANA transition. But if you just go to the homepage of ICANN.org, you will find everything. So not only can you follow everything, but you can actually post submissions. You can help. It could be just things like, by the way, are you aware of this best practice about good governance that has been published by X or Y? I think that would be probably where civil society input would be most helpful. Although, again, I think it's important civil society is very across the board. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jean-Jacques. I can tell you that personally I'm an observer in these working groups because I'm overloaded with work and I don't want to engage too far. But I'm inviting all those also online. Please join us, and you can join these working groups. Raise your voice, even if you're not really yet a member of NPOC. We need your voice even before you're a member. It's important. So we are going to proceed with Nigel Hickson. Nigel, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, and I'll be very brief. My name is Nigel Hickson. I'm the vice president for IGO engagement in Geneva, where I engage for ICANN with the United Nations, other IGO bodies, and with the various government missions in Geneva. So you might ask, why am I talking to you? Well, apart from the fact that it's always a pleasure to be in a meeting with Rudy and Klaus and others, I just wanted to make a few points following on from what Jean-Jacques has said about the importance of civil society engagement. Because the multi-stakeholder model, which we, if you like, we cherish, we work in, we embrace, we curse, we shouldn't take it for granted, because it's not a given. The multi-stakeholder model is something which is, if you like, in terms of internet governance, was bequeathed to ICANN by the US government. There was a debate in 2003 and 2005 whether it should be taken away and given to the United Nations. And that debate is taking place again this year at the United Nations. In December, there'll be a summit of all government leaders, 192 government leaders, well, ministers anyway. And once again, there'll be a debate on whether internet governance is something that should be practiced in the multi-stakeholder community, by us, by ISOC, by the regional internet registries and other bodies, or whether it should be something that should be bequeathed to a United Nations agency or to the United Nations. Sorry,
it's okay.
Might affect the audio. So I just wanted to highlight the importance of this. And I think civil society, in the same way as you play an important role in the climate change negotiations, in the negotiations that are going to take place on the Millennium Development Goals, or the replacement for the Millennium Development Goals, the Sustainable Development Goals, the discussions that will take place in September in New York, that civil society has also got a role to play in this review of the WSIS structure. Now, as Jean-Jacques said, it's difficult. The process for discussing the preparation for this WSIS review is intergovernment. So not just civil society outside with the placards. ICANN is outside with the placards as well, trying to get in. It's difficult. But we are working with ISOC, we're working with the ITU, we're working with other bodies to ensure that the importance of us all working together on ICT issues is recognised by the UN. So I'll finish there. Thank you.
Thank you, Nigel. And indeed, as I'm also somehow involved in the WSIS Plus 10, which is going to now have important meetings in Geneva, I think it's important that we try to bring the knowledge that we are collecting to all together to our NGOs, and so that they can pick up topics and items that are interesting for them. And I know I see heads that I have and people that I have been discussing to yesterday and this morning, even from the fellowship. And we have somebody in the room here that is from a country where it is even more difficult than you can imagine to have an open and accessible internet. And I think it's important that you're raising your voice also and bring up the difficulties, the questions that you're encountering when you want to do your work as an NGO or as a structure that is in the civil society. And maybe you can just quickly bring your point as we discussed yesterday. I think it's good that Nigel hears this too also.
My name is Mehrzad Azghandi from Iran. Everybody knows Iran. And actually we have, as you said, we have too many problems in Iran in dealing with internet and its facilities. Government policies and regulatory issues are very important for us. Unfortunately, we tried last year to initiate Persian IGF, opening the governance discussions in community. Unfortunately, it was not a successful plan, and you may know that due to several issues, the project stopped and cost ceased. Sorry. Regarding this community, I'm a fellow, you know. I'm here to learn something, and I'm not very familiar with acronyms. But I saw what I see, what I saw here in this room was very attractive for me, very comprehensive. That it is really show that this process between civil societies, it is a practical issue that it's gonna happening here. It's I'm very excited about that. I saw that something is going happen from the side of the civil society, and in continuing that the issue of my country, I actually started a non-profit organization to continue the internet governance issues, distributing, creating awareness, capacity building, because in Iran we don't have an independent NGO. Actually, the government is observing anything, and of course we have NGOs, but many problems we have in our country that you may know or heard about it. Anyway, I'm very happy and pleased of my participation here, and thank you gentlemen, that gave me the chance of this speaking. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And I wanted to highlight that because it demonstrates that there is not only those NGOs that we can immediately access, there are also issues of NGOs not able to access us, or even we not being able to access them due to regulatory issues. Yeah. That's also we have to take in consideration for the future. So thank you, Nigel.
Thank you.
And with this, I would like to conclude that this has been, again, a second fruitful webinar with a lot of interaction, a lot of input, a lot of thoughts. And I think what I have noted is that I have a long list of work on the plane back home to build the next one, because I have a lot of new items that I want to discuss with you, with the NGOs. And for those who are willing to join our next webinars, please send us a mail. You can do it to info@npoc.org, and we will handle all the incoming requests and keep you informed as soon as possible. So many, many thanks for all of you here in the room and those online, and I hope to see you again at our next meeting. Thank you very much.